And welcome back to another episode of Candid, where we have real talks with real people. I'm Shanae, and today I am here with Bethany. So unfortunately, today Bethany has ditched us once again because she wanna be babysitting children, you know. Yep. But
She's still celebrating her birthday by babysitting children.
Exactly, like who's through that? Why would she leave us like that? Like, come on. But today we have quite a few things that we're going to be discussing that has happened, I would say, in the last week and a half in the country. First thing I wanted to talk about was the amount of murders that have been happening in the country recently. So I don't know if you guys remember, but I think it was 2015 where we had the most killings. I think it was 2015 and there was 146 murders in that year. And after that, we didn't have as much as that. We still had a lot of murders, but not nearly as much. So based on a report that was given, it was set on Eyewitness, murders have been up 30% compared to last year. And apparently in 2015, up to July 3rd, there were 75 murders. And up to July, was this July? Yeah, and up to July 3rd in 2022, we had 74 murders. So it's basically like we're on an uptrend and we're basically competing with 2015, I guess. And we've been, I think in one day we had like three or four murders. And this Minister of National Security, Wayne Monroe, says that nearly 50% of the murder victims for the year were on bail for homicide. So it seems that these are murders among gangs and what they call retaliatory. And apparently March was our deadliest month. We had 22 murders. So that's very scary. I don't know what we're going to be doing to combat this. So
it's always interesting when we talk about murders because it all goes back to the issue of crime. Because I think we have this new urban renewal idea that we have coming out soon. But it's always like, you know, crime is a very difficult thing to solve. But the fact that we have people getting to the point where it's like, yeah, bro, you got to die. It's insane to me. It's like, that's how far we gotta get. Death. Y'all can't just fight each other. A little fist fight. Or talk. What happened to talking?
It seems that everything is resulting in violence. And I feel like sometimes people just get killed. I wasn't killed for no reason, but the reasons that issues happen, that sounds weird. That's a weird sentence. The reason that people get into issues in the first place, like, problems would be so tiny, like, It's really, I don't understand it. And also, I know Dudley don't really like the Christian Council. But the president of the council said that the murder rate is alarming and requires a multi-layered approach. He said this after eight men were killed in a 7-day period. I think this was last week sometime. And he said, as a church, we are deeply concerned about the amount of murders and the rate of murders, which put us on track to be the highest ever. The church, in collaboration with Urban Renewal and the Crime Council, will begin a time of collaboration so that we can have some projects that are ongoing work together. So I don't really know what their plan is with Urban Renewal. Like, okay, are they going to like do programs and stuff? But like, do we really think, y'all like Dudley, let me get the thoughts. You really think like having like programs and new programs and stuff is gonna stop you from getting involved in crime?
So first of all, I'd like to clarify, I do not have a problem with the Christian Council as an entity. I have a problem with the things that they decide to comment on and the times when they decide to take action. Mm-hmm. So if you believe that I don't like them, it would come as a surprise that I actually agree with them on this front. Because I don't think that the solution, because I'm sure a lot of us would hear the Christian Council said, and then our first response would be like, they're probably just telling them that like, you got to pray about it or something. But it is, when you involve people in things and you take away, a lot of times you hear that people join gangs because young men join gangs because they're looking for a place of belonging, a sense of affiliation, Some people go to the point of like, oh, it's because they lack the father figure and there's a camaraderie and the people, blah, blah, blah. It's like a brotherhood and this, that, and the next. So if you forge a sense of camaraderie and whatever through community activities and constant community activities, you reduce the chances of them joining a gang. It's not going to remove the chances 100%. You could live a double life, you could do whatever. However, taking steps to actually do something is one thing to plan something. You gotta do it. Faith without works is dead and all that stuff. So you got if this meetings that they have is going to end up resulting in actual meaningful community activities, then I see no problem. I see no problem with them doing it. I don't see any problem with them even saying that it's the Christian Council idea, as long as, something happens, I ain't knocking it.
Okay, I just feel like, I don't know, I feel like it, like you said, it could bring some sense of camaraderie, but I feel like that's for the people who actually want to do that, if that makes sense. Because I feel like some people are so set on, I don't say so set, because I don't know, I've never been in a gang and I've never experienced that. So I only could talk
You
from
never,
my assumption.
you never experienced that
No, like I only could talk from what I assume because I've never lived that. I've never been in that situation. But I feel as though, like, some people, I don't want to say that like, they can't be helped, but some people have, like, a mindset like, this is what I want to do. And no matter what you try to do to get them out of that lifestyle or away from that or prevent it, some people just run towards it because it's either all they know or that's just something they truly want to do. So it's
Well,
just like,
that's really a problem with rehabilitation. Like, there are some people that you can't rehabilitate. If they're trying to do community programs and stuff like that, they're trying to prevent. That's like an action towards prevention. So they're trying to stop people from coming to the conclusion that their only option is to go back to the streets. They're trying to talk, because I mean, if you're trying to target a 30-year-old man and be like, hey, come play ball with us. They might be like, I can't play ball with you because somebody from the opposite gang might pull up there and shoot me. So, it's more effective to go after kids and younger people, which it seems like what they're trying to do.
well, since we're talking about, I guess, I don't want to say, we'll be talking about murder, so we should say. But this is apparently infant mortality and child death rates have spiked, according to the health minister, Dr. Michael Darvel. And I am looking at this article, right? And this is saying, I think he's trying to associate the deaths of infants and children under 14 to COVID-19, but it's not really clear because the article says that it says that the infant mortality rate ranged from 14% for live births in 1998, and for the data between 2018 to 2019, the infant mortality rate is somewhere between 17.5% to 19.4%. And he said this is alarming and it's a matter of urgency, right? And the article jumps and says Darvel also reiterated that the government has secured more than 24,000 doses of Pfizer pediatric vaccine through COVAX. But the year 2018, 2019, we didn't have COVID. So how we get jumping into COVID? That's confusing. I'm confused because I don't know if this is just the way that the reporter wrote the story, or if this is genuinely like how the conversation went. I hope this is not how the conversation went. It says that only 49.3% of the total population has been vaccinated, and that more than 347,742 doses of COVID-19 vaccines have been administered since March 14th, and this includes the first, second, extended, and booster doses.
I was supposed to get my booster dose and I never went.
No, it'd be like that sometimes. It's like,
Yeah,
you could be okay.
but yeah, no, I mean it's kind of, if the way that it went was that I'm sure that there was a notable amount of children that may infants that may have passed due to exposure to COVID conditions, but
And
I
it
don't
was
think it would have
changing
been
pretty
enough
quickly.
to yeah, like by a whole, I don't even think it would be enough to be a whole percentage point, because even though children get sick very easily, their system is also very adaptable. So they try, so their body kind of like is like, oh yeah, I'm sick. Time to fight it quickly. And unless they was born with a fairly weak immune system, and then, you know, that's unfortunate. But I don't know. Infant mortality is a very complicated thing, because children so complicated. I want everybody to look this up. There's this thing called sudden infant death syndrome. Like, your child can literally be healthy, happy, laughing, giggling, whatever, and then when you wake up the next day,
Will
it
be
just they're just dead for no explicable reason. Nothing going on. You ain't do nothing wrong. You was going to the doctor every on time, every time, taking the medicine. You got them all their shots, and then all of a sudden you woke up and the child was dead. So children are very stressful. However, I don't know. The idea that it was like, ah yes, COVID, it made it rise by like 2, 3 points. It's like, I don't know, doc. You gotta show me a little bit more.
Yeah, and I was just like, I don't see the correlation, because that said 2018 to 2019. So I'm like, so how are we relating
How
this to
many
COVID-19?
of us had COVID before COVID was a thing? Remember, man, I remember. Remember pre-COVID? Remember when everybody got sick? Like December 2019, everybody got
Yeah,
sick,
and everyone's like,
and then
he's
COVID
like, I
came
have
in a couple months,
COVID
and it
in
was like, I sure I did have COVID that first time
December.
when everybody. But it was kind of convenient though, because COVID come after a lot of people. Everybody got sick. You couldn't go like 2 steps without finding somebody who had a flu or whatever. And then and then turn around and it's like, boy, that was the early COVID. Like, what is early COVID,
Yeah.
bro?
Like, what are you talking about?
Like, what is early COVID? I don't understand. That's like this. I don't understand if it just really has to go to the question of how are our medical facilities being taken care of if we're noticing a steady rise in the deaths of infants over years when we didn't have a pandemic.
Agree, and I feel like it's so much factors that goes into infant mortality in terms of conditions in the hospital, conditions of healthcare, or like across the board. Because I don't want to overtly say, but generally across the world, it's normally if you have private insurance, you sometimes get better care than if you got public insurance. I ain't saying it's the case everywhere, but I don't want to say it's the case here, but we're just throwing it out, right? So I feel like
I think we could safely say that if you could afford to go to doctors, you have a better chance than if you have to go to PMH.
or even PMH private. Like,
I
no,
didn't even know PMH
yeah,
had
they
a private
assure you, Dudley, like, because I spent time in the hospital in private, and I had my grandfather in public at some point in my life, not shortly thereafter, and the experience is completely different. And I feel like there needs to be something to close that gap in healthcare. I'm not saying it's every situation, but from what I've seen, there is some disparities in healthcare in our own country. And that can play a role in infant mortality. People not being able to afford to take their child to the, because they don't have insurance, take their
People
child to a
just not
private doctor
being
and
able
they
to
ain't gonna go see
afford
the doctor.
healthcare.
Exactly. So I feel like there's so many different things that could play into it than just COVID-19, even though the numbers you referred to didn't happen. I mean, happened before COVID-19. But it's just a complicated topic altogether. So we would have to evaluate not only our healthcare system, but ourselves as a people, our eating habits and stuff, because these type of things also affect our children. And just the whole thing, the whole culture, to try and explain why these things could possibly occur. Yeah, I think it's a lot deeper than just
looks like a whole episode unto itself.
Yeah. So since we back on COVID, the crowd of the government is now pushing hard towards a 70% vaccination goal. And they say right now we're at a plateau and they're trying to get over a hump and reach their target of 70% of the Bahamians being vaccinated throughout the country. So far, 168,257 persons have been fully vaccinated. And yeah, fully vaccinated. What else? And it says, the Bahamas third wave had the longest duration and goes on record of having up to about 42% of the patient caseload in the hospital and the highest human cost with a mortality rate of 138.4 per 100,000 persons. So there's that. And they said that the cost, the direct cost of the public hospital authority was $88.6 million and the Ministry of Health just over $31.5 million. So that's what COVID has cost the healthcare system. So they're pushing towards 70%. But another article that I saw noted that the reason that vaccinations have decreased is because the number of COVID cases have decreased. So people don't feel as though it's as urgent. They feel like, you know, the pandemic over, so they're not to get vaccinated. I mean, but maybe they just don't want to get vaccinated. It's each their own. It's a choice.
I don't think the pandemic is over. I think it's...
That's what many people think.
I mean, plenty of people can be wrong. It's okay for them to be wrong, you know? Like, I mean, I don't know. As a person... I always have a complicated relationship with the COVID topic because I'm fully vaccinated. Although I always say that if I had a choice, I probably wouldn't get vaccinated. I kind of did not. I mean, getting vaccinated just was a matter of convenience, not a matter of, oh Lord, if I get this, I get dead. Because I still got COVID. And, you know, I mean, it got me eventually. And I think now, the most common variant is the Omicron variant, and the Omicron variant is kind of similar to the flu. So, I mean, if you catch it, then regardless of the variant, you're still gonna, you know, you're gonna develop antibodies to it. And I don't know if it's as pressing, since it's not as pressing a matter, since the people aren't dying at record rates, I think it's just naturally not as serious as how the government or governments are trying to make it seem. Like, it's not like every other person you know has COVID now. It's kind of just like your friend who you ain't speak to since college have COVID. Oh no, you know, that's what it's kind of like now. So this is not to say that you should not get vaccinated. If you can get vaccinated, if it's not going to bother your current health and whatever have you, then you should definitely strongly consider getting vaccinated. It is much more convenient than not being vaccinated. However, comma, freedom of choice. So, yeah.
Say however, comma. But yeah, I hear what you're saying because I have not been vaccinated. I have not contracted the virus either, but I just feel as though I'm not going to tell people, oh, don't get vaccinated, because it's a choice. If you want to protect yourself, that's great, go ahead and do that for you. Me personally, I don't think it's something I want to do. I probably will do it at some point, but just I didn't have a need to do it at this point, so I just didn't do it, to be honest.
Listen, it ain't like it's one of those things. It ain't like it going on your immunization card. They made a whole separate card for it. So it ain't like it's one of the immunizations you gotta have to travel anymore. So it's kind of like they've made it option. They've made it more optional than before. Even when they tried to incentivize it by being like, hey, if you get vaccinated, you enter the chance to win like $100, which I thought was hilarious that the prize for getting vaccinated was maybe $100. It's like, bro, come on. If you want Bahamians to get the vaccine in mass, you gotta offer them more than one adult dollar. You gotta give them Now, if you'd have said like $1,000, I would have been there like, now hold on, I'll get vaccinated again myself.
My God.
What? Like I'll get a vaccination again. I'll get vaccinated 3 times if it increases my chances of getting $1,000. $1,000 for nothing?
Yeah, but I feel like that whole thing was kind of wrong because it's almost like, let's be honest, a lot of people in the Bahamas, the average Bahamian doesn't have, I think I saw a study said that doesn't have $500 in their bank account. I feel like it was wrong to
Incentivize.
incentivize a vaccine to get an outcome that you want, because it's like you're giving people are now in survival mode, and it's like you are using money to get people to do what you want to do. Okay, other countries are striving towards 90%, 80%, 100% vaccination rates. You're trying to do the same thing. You want to meet a goal. So in order to meet your goal, okay, I know a lot of Bahamians are suffering, so I'm going to offer them money. And a lot of people in that case may have felt as though they didn't have a choice. And I feel I always felt that that whole thing was kind of weird, and it's not something that if I was the government that I would have done, because I don't feel like it was morally correct. But hey, to each their own. But did they actually do that though? Did they actually like give them money?
I did not keep up with that because I just found it laughable that we were offering people $100.
$100.
My thing is this, right? First of all, whoever did the study about Bahamian, most Bahamians not having $500 in their bank account, first of all, stay out my business, please. Second of all, though, honorary. If you're going to give people $100, if you're going to give people only $100 for getting vaccinated, you might as well just foregone the whole lottery aspect and just giving people who got vaccinated $100. And that's not to say, and I understand it might be morally duplicitous of you to say, yes, well, now the people who are getting vaccinated are going to get $100. And the people who got vaccinated before, tough luck, buddy. You should have waited. Yeah, I get all that. It could
You
have
should have
caused a
waited,
big,
screaming.
another big issue. But if you want something done, I mean, money is the biggest motivator to get anything done. Even $100, like even as I scoff kind of at the idea that the government was offering big growing people $100, even though that does sound laughable, $100 that you don't have. Getting $100 that you didn't have is better than never getting $100. So, I don't know. It's like, do you want to seem morally upright and not offer people money? Or do you want to, or do you want to get this thing done? I feel as though that is something for the Christian Council to get to discuss because they are trying to maintain the moral fiber.
That's very true. I don't remember them having anything to say on that. I think like that would have been a good time for them to chime in and hear their thoughts on that.
The best opportunities are often noticed in hindsight.
Oh, and another thing that I sent you, Dudley. The former Prime Minister, Dr. Hubert Minnis, said he supports the Davis's administration's move to expunge minor COVID-19 emergency order breaches handed out during his tenure. Like, oh, excuse me, sir, you're the reason. You're the reason. What do you mean? Dudley, what do you mean? He supports the expungement of these minor. Sir, you did that.
He means that if you have a legal criminal record as a result of breaching COVID protocols, specifically during the lockdown periods, he's saying that he agrees with the idea that you should not be treated as a criminal because you broke
Dudley,
the
he's the one who gave that rule in the first place. Like, that didn't make no sense. Stop
Man,
laughing, Dudley. Don't laugh at him, man. What do you mean?
listen, I can't explain this any other way. But nah, on a serious note, on a more serious note, I'm making light of a serious situation. I'm sorry. It's a coping mechanism. But at the same time, feel as though it's very hilarious. It's very hilarious to be the source of a problem and then to agree with the solution. It's like, hey, irony is irony not slapping you right now? Like, please tell me that there's a great irony that isn't hitting you. I need to know because I can't believe the man would say this live and publicly. That's something you're supposed to take to your grave, son. You're supposed to be, because, and and my next thing is, isn't he no longer the leader of the opposition? Why is
Why are you so much
not
in
to
the
say
mood?
that. Not to say that he shouldn't comment on matters that arise during the country. He has the right to do that as a citizen. Everybody has that right. And as a more public citizen, he has even more of a right to do that because he has an image to maintain or whatever have you. And he's also an elected member of parliament. However, come on, still, it's almost like he acting surprised. Like, hell no, he's not acting surprised. I shouldn't say that. It's just weird that I think it was weird that it would go on your criminal record in the first place. It's like, yeah, you left your house at 8 o'clock. Yeah, you're officially recognized as a serious criminal now. It was like, what? Because I left my home? Are you serious?
Which
But
isn't
hey.
right as a citizen of the Bahamas, but hey. Okay, so on another note, I don't know if you saw that the new that a new commissioner of police, Clayton Fernander. He was sworn in as the ninth police commissioner in an independent Bahamas
He's
during.
only number nine.
Yeah, he's number nine.
Oh, what? Whoa. Well, a lot of people were surprised to find out that the Bahamas was only 49. So I, man.
What do you mean they surprised? They didn't know that in school.
People on the internet was carrying on bad Sunday. It was like, if the Bahamas turn 49 again next year, I was like, bro, this is the first time the Bahamas turned 49. That's why we're celebrating it.
Like somebody
Like,
has
hold on there,
balanced the
buckaroo.
rock, okay? Let's try
Anyway.
this again. If we were independent in 1973, our team, 2023, will be 50 years old. So if it's 23, we're 49. Come on, Bumaki.
I want every single party to have junkanoo at every single event for the whole year that we turn in 50. If it's a government sanctioned event, the Valley Saxons, one family, whoever, bring all the A groups. All of them need to be playing at every single function. As soon as the part where we do all the official government to do over, as soon as the closing remarks was given, all you see, big rush of bomb.
So yeah, basically when he was sworn in, he revealed his, I guess to say, his plans, and he said they are gonna have a bold response to crime and it will become more evident and impactful. So he immediately established a special anti-gang and firearms unit in response to the 75 murders that we have seen that so far for the year, but it's probably more than 75, but this was last week. But 75 murders, which is, and 15% of them were, as you know, suspects in murder cases, like I mentioned previously. So that's why that was his response to that was making this gang and firearms unit, which will be situated at the police headquarters.
Why do we keep making units?
I think this is their way to try, you know, like categorize the crime so that they could get to the bottom of it. I'm assuming.
It's one thing to categorize crime, but I mean, like, is like the solution isn't just making a new unit. I mean, does the unit? I guess my real question is like, when we make a unit, do they have specialized training for members of the unit? And if so, if this is a new unit, who is issuing the training? That's my real question. But I mean, you could go on. I
Well,
don't think you'll finish.
it doesn't specify that, but it says that this unit will operate as a standalone unit with a more focused approach on disrupting criminal activities, specifically firearms and ammunition. And he said they will require a they will what? They will make a request to have a car dedicated the fast-tracking illegal firearms and ammunition cases for swift justice. And on top of that, another one of his solutions was to... What are you going to say? To review laws to add tougher penalties in cases where persons are found.
It is not the job of the police to look at laws.
Well,
it's not their job to create laws.
He said, we want to review the laws to add tougher penalties in cases where persons are found in possession of an illegal weapon and the use of a weapon in commission of an offense. And he said, tough times call for tough measures.
I like how you saying it, like using so, like trying to make it, like trying to make what he sound even more like bombastic. But it's like, all right then, buddy, we've heard this one before, you know.
He said, and they would also have a monthly meeting with all law enforcement heads to exchange ideas about crime fighting. They will also create a domestic violence unit that will have officials from social services, religious leaders, and private entities. And what else he say?
How do religious? Well, you know, this is not a knock on the Christian Council, even though this could definitely sound like one. But the question, what training have religious leaders gone under that allows them to have a voice on what a crime unit should do? I understand if you want them for therapy purposes or like to talk to the criminals about their faith or whatever, but in establishing the unit or in having meetings with the unit, what does the religious person do?
So, also, I found this very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
He said, we are reviewing the most recent unsuccessful applicants in order to, this is for the police force now, in order to provide them with an opportunity to continue their dreams. We have identified over 100 persons on this list, and we will not allow them to fall by the wayside or turn to a life of crime simply because they did not pass the entrance exam. So my question is, the whole purpose of having entrance exams and what you call and standards is that so you only attract a certain demographic of people. If these, well, let me say demographic, a certain type of people who could pass these things, I should say. Not saying that those people won't do wayward things, but the whole purpose of that is for these entrance exams and standards to act as a barrier so that anybody just can join the police force, right? So why are we going to throw these things away and allow these people to come in and become a part of the police force? If they didn't pass the exam or they didn't pass the physical or whatever other standards they have, why are we going back and looking upon these people? I'm sorry, but if I apply to go to a job, and the job health, say I have to have a degree, I have to have experience, and I have to be friendly and something else, and I have to be a Bahamian citizen, let's say that. And let's say I'm not a Bahamian citizen, and I don't have the experience, 9 times out of 10, they're going to throw my resume away or just not interview me at all. So why is it that these people who fail the exam are going to be looked at again?
You failed them. And I've never taken a written exam to be a police officer. I have no idea what it is. But I do know that you need a C in your math and English, BJC, and maybe BGCSE. I'm not sure if they have that requirement. But I know the BJC for sure. So if you're going to fail the written test, which I don't know where in the process you take the test, but I would assume it's one of the first things that you do with your application so that you could, you know, proceed to go on to the physical aspect. If you fail a lot, why or even how is it possible that we could think that you would make a good officer? Like, and I mean, they might have skills that are valuable and worthwhile in other areas. But that sounds like a social services issue. That doesn't sound like a police issue. Sounds like you should forward that person's information on to social services so the social services can help them get a job in a field that better suits them. Unless And this is just a random stream of thoughts. Unless the police are going to take these applicants and like sponsor them go to PTVI to learn a trade. That's the only way I could see this making sense.
And it's also unfair because if I took the police and just examined, I passed the physical and all these stuff, I got a nail off of passing the requirements. So how is it now fair that 100 individuals who have not passed the requirements get to bypass those things? And he didn't say take the exam again or whatever they failed, do it again. He didn't say that. He said that they would review them and give them an opportunity to not have their dreams crushed, so they don't turn their life around. Excuse me, sir. What?
Man, first of all, I don't mean to be this person, but if your dreams is to be a police officer, I don't know. I feel as though you should aim for higher. Like, don't tell me that your dream is to be an
That you
officer. I
cannot say
want to
that.
know your. Yes, I could because I, the whole hold on. I didn't finish. Let me finish my thought. If your dream, like, it's one thing to tell me that, oh, my dream is to be a police officer. I want to know, like, so you want to be a detective, a sergeant? Like, what kind of police officer do you want to be? Because just saying you want to be a police officer is like, okay, cool. There's a lot of those. Like, our armed forces need to have people that have like specific goals. Like, they need to know what they want to become. I'm sure not everybody in the police force wants to become the commissioner of police, but they want to become something, or they want to change something. Like, they grew up somewhere and they want to, and they was like, oh man, there's too much crime around here. I really seriously doubt that all 100 of those applicants were just like, well, this is my last resort. I don't think, like, anyway, but if you fail a test and you have to retake the test, that's kind of how these things
Into
things
work,
work.
right?
Like if you fail your BGCSE, you have to take that again. You might not be a high school student anymore, but you still got to take the BGCSE over. If you fail the SAT, you can't fail the SAT. If you do bad on the SAT or the ACT, you have to take those things again. Like, you have to just study harder and do better, bro. I don't understand what this. It's kind of like, it's like giving out participation trophies. I remember when I was in a spelling bee and I lost, came like fifth or something, and they gave me a participation award. I was like, I don't want this. I didn't earn this. Like, I kind of like anybody could get this. You just have to be in the spelling bee. We don't need like. I don't feel as though everybody needs a participation award, and I definitely don't feel as though people who are trying to become persons who are going to swear an oath to serve and protect and are going to be given firearms legally. I definitely don't think that we should give participation awards that allow them to become these types of individuals. Like, that's strange. That should ring off a bunch of red flags to anybody, because it's like, sir, what do you mean we're gonna give them a chance? They couldn't do this on the written. Now we're gonna tell them this is how you fire a gun? That don't seem right.
No, it don't. And that's why I say, like, maybe I'm interpreting it wrong. I am hoping that he means that they'll give them another chance at the exam or whatever part that they failed,
But you could, but they already
clearly,
have the option. That's already an option. If you fail the test, you could just take it again next time they give out the
oh
test.
man, what he said, hold on, he said we will not allow them to fall by the wayside or turn to a life of crime simply because, keyword here, simply because they did not pass the entrance exam. Excuse me, sir, if I don't pass the entrance exam to go to school, I can't go, right? What do you mean?
Like, if your first choice, if you failed your first choice college, you better hope you pass your second or third choice.
Like, why are our standards so low for these things? And these are people who are supposed to, like you say, protect and serve our country. And then when we criticize these agencies or these organizations, government organizations, they They tend to get upset at the citizens, but my thing is, it's obvious that you always pick off anybody off the side of the road. Because you literally just said that. So.
You tell me that I can't say you can't just be a police officer, but you just can say government agencies picking people up from the side of the road. But no, I mean, I get your passion. I understand. I can understand where you're coming from. But this, I mean, out of all the jobs in the world, in the Bahamas, I should say, out of all the jobs in the Bahamas that shouldn't just be, you failed, but we could give you a chance anyway. I feel as though being an armed officer, like, that's a lot of responsibility. That's a
Indeed.
lot of responsibility to own a gun. Like, just being a citizen and being told that you could own a gun. It's a pretty, I mean, in the Bahamas, you have to go through a pretty extensive process. You got to get background. They got to do a background check. You got to buy a safe. You got to have the safe in a place that's away from kids and all that stuff. But if it's easier to become a police officer than to buy a gun, then I think that we failed somewhere along the line.
Yep, definitely. So that was a very interesting and insightful conversation. We hope that you guys enjoyed this episode of Candid. You can follow our socials at Candid242 on Instagram and Facebook. So we'll see you next week, guys.